for His touch. Nothing quite like it, I know that. I've experienced that some from time to time. I appreciate it. Thank you for singing tonight. Turn to Ezra chapter 4. Ezra chapter 4. We're looking at needing to get back to what we used to be, where we used to be, or needing to get to where we've never been before, whichever way applies to you. And we've looked at the bondage was escaped in the first couple of chapters. And the battle was encountered as soon as he were set free from the Babylonian captivity and were allowed to go back to the land of Judah, to the promised land, to the city of Jerusalem, and start rebuilding the temple and eventually their homes. There was a battle encountered. And we'll look tonight, chapters 5 and 6 deals with the building was erected. We won't get there tonight, of course, but I'm glad that the job got done. The temple was rebuilt and was really built. Solomon's temple was destroyed. Zerubbabel came and they built the temple again. Verse 24, then ceased the work of the house of God, which is at Jerusalem. So it ceased unto the second year of the reign of Darius, king of Persia. I touched on this just a little bit when I was ending last time. We went into this book. In chapter 4, there's a parenthesis, or there's an overlook. There's a view into the future. Like I mentioned, sometimes movies will do that. You'll be watching a movie, and it'll be talking about and showing about today. Then all of a sudden, everything's different. And it takes a moment to realize what's going on. You realize they've moved into the future. They show you what's going to happen with this person or these people. Then they go back to the present. And that's exactly what Ezra does in chapter 4. And if we really want to get the chronology and the understanding of what's going on, it'd be good for us to read. In fact, let's go back to verse 4, and we're going to skip the verses that have the parentheses, and we'll get the thrust of what's going on. Then the people of the land weakened the hands of the people of Judah and troubled them in building and hired counselors against them to frustrate the purpose all the days of Cyrus, king of Persia, even until the reign of Darius, king of Persia. Then go straight to 24. Then ceased the work of the house of God, which is at Jerusalem. So it ceased unto the second year of the reign of Darius, king of Persia. If you do that, you really understand the chronology of what's going on and how it took place. The narrative is more clear. No matter what, they decided to stop building on the house of God. It says, then ceased the work of the house of God, which is at Jerusalem. They stopped. They were under attack. They were being opposed. We are not sure, as I mentioned last week, they were by force and by power, which means an army armed. It means somehow the enemy came against them in an abrupt manner, but it was still the people of Judah's decision to stop the work. They did not have to. I mean, by that, they could have trusted God and continued to work on the house. We're talking about restoring. We're talking about rebuilding. We're talking about getting back to where we used to be. And if we stop every time there's opposition, we're going to do more stopping than starting. We'll never reach the goal. We'll never get back where we used to be or where we need to be if every time the devil attacks, we give in to him. They could have trust in God, and he would have provided the means whereby they could have continued the work. I know that because later on, that's exactly what they do. They are still going through opposition later on, as we'll see. But they trusted the Lord, and He took care of them. So no matter what the reason, the bottom line is they are the ones that decided to stop. I say again, God would have enabled them. He always provides where He guides. Then cease the work of the house of God. I said last week, I believe that's some of the saddest words in the Bible, that they quit when they didn't have to. Here's these people who have left Babylon. I mean, they've established their lives in Babylon during those 70 years of captivity. They have jobs, they have property, they have friends, they have family. It is where they live. It is what they've become accustomed to. And these people left all that behind and traveled hundreds of miles back to the land of Judah, to the promised land. You remember, just about as soon as they started working, the Samaritans came and said, well, let us join you. And these people stood on the right thing and stood on the biblical thing and said no. So they had moved all these miles from their homeland that had become their homeland in Babylon and traveled to this place, and they have stood for what is right, and now they're ready to quit. It's sad to realize what they've already gone through, and yet it seems like they're making some headway, and they are. But then all of a sudden, something happens, and they quit. They allow their emotions to control them. The fear of what might happen, the fear of the opposition got the best of them. They stood for separation. They stood for right doctrine in saying, Samaritans, you're not a part of us. You can't join. But now their emotions get the best of them. And I believe that's true so many times today. So many of God's people are right doctrinally speaking, but they let their emotions control them. And I guess I shouldn't say them. I should say me and us. So they cease the work. Now, there's no doubt that this reveals their attitude about the things of God. They are building the temple. That's more than just a church building. A church building is important to us. Hope you love this place. I do. I like just coming here. I like coming to church here. I believe it's a place God blesses and He's placed us here. But the temple was more than just a church building. It was like a church, a place where they met God, but it was a place where they took their sacrifices that they offered, listen to me, to atone for their sins. This was a place where they could come, and I'll use the word, get rid of their sin and please God. And God did tell them to rebuild or to build the temple. And they knew in stopping they were disobeying God. Yet they did anyway. I say again, it reveals their attitude. They lack the interest they needed. And so many times that's exactly why we don't make any progress getting back to where we used to be. We're satisfied where we're at. And it's too difficult to get back. If you've ever had the desire to get close to God and to rekindle that hunger and desire and walk and enjoy His presence and power. If you ever have set out on that journey, you'll realize it's not an easy one. It's difficult, but it's worthwhile. So these people let what happened cause them to stop the work and cease the action of trying to get back to where they used to be. Again, it shows a lack of interest. It shows that they're not as committed as they seem to have been. Then in chapter 5, verse 1, talking here about the building is erected, chapter 5, chapter 6. And the first thoughts I see in verse 1 and verse 2 is this: the prophets are speaking. Well, what do these people need? They have come back to the land. They have begun the work. They have been discouraged and they have been disheartened and they have stopped the work that God had told them to do. And they're pretty much just hanging around and living in the land and, as we'll find, developing a lifestyle there in the land. What is it they need? I tell you what they need. They need some preaching. They need God to speak to them. And that's exactly what happens. Look in verse 1. Then the prophets, Haggai the prophet, and Zechariah the son of Iddo, prophesied unto the Jews that were in Judah and Jerusalem in the name of the God of Israel, even unto them. God is beginning to speak to these people who have become disheartened, disillusioned, discouraged, and have quit. And he comes with to them through two men, Zechariah and Haggai. These prophets come and speak to the people. Haggai comes first. Now remember, the altar has been completed, and the foundation of the temple has been completed, but it's just been sitting there now. So God speaks to Haggai and tells him to go and speak to the people of Judah and those in Jerusalem. You see, it's been 16 years since they stopped work. My, how time flies. And during these 16 years, there hasn't been any work done. I say God has been very patient with them. I am surprised he didn't just kick them back out of the land, but he didn't. He's been very patient, and he is now calling them through his men to go back to work. Haggai in his book, in fact, turn to the book of Haggai. While I'm talking, I'll give you a few minutes to find it. Haggai. Haggai lived the same time Ezra did. Zechariah lived the same time Ezra did. Esther lived the same time Ezra did. And Haggai, in his book, speaks to these people of Judah that we're talking about in the book of Ezra. He speaks four messages. And look in Haggai verse 2. We're going to pick through, if you found it, Haggai chapter 1 verse 2. Thus speaketh, let's just go ahead and let me turn with you, and I'm going to read, let me read verse 1. In the second year of Darius the king, in the sixth month, in the first day of the month, came the word of the Lord by Haggai the prophet unto Zerubbabel the son of Shealtiel, that's not as too good, but it's done now, governor of Judah, and Joshua the son of Josadak, and the high priest saying. So God comes through the prophet Haggai speaking to who? Zerubbabel, the governor. He's a civil leader. And Joshua, the same man by two names, he's the spiritual leader. God, listen to me, speaks to the leaders first. And understand that, because if there's going to be a move back to rebuilding the temple and getting back to God, those leaders are going to be important. And if the leaders aren't right, it's very doubtful that the people are going to get right. But if maybe the leaders will get right, then maybe the people will be more prone to get right. So God sends Haggai to speak to the people. And verse 2 says, thus speaketh, this is what Haggai is saying, thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, this people say, the time is not come, the time that the Lord's house should be built. Notice first what Haggai makes sure they know. This is not me speaking, says Haggai. He says, this is God speaking. Thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying. One thing for sure, if it's Haggai speaking, they don't have to listen. If it's Haggai speaking, they don't have to listen because there's not going to be much consequences. But if it is God, they'd better listen, because if it is God and they don't listen, there will be consequences. Haggai begins his message by saying, "This is from God and it's not from me." By the way, that's still true today. I know we preachers, and I'm a perfect example. The only thing I do well is mess up and make mistakes. But we preachers, though we make mistakes and misspeak, we still are the mouthpiece of God. It is God speaking to us and through us to y'all. And that's why it's so important that we listen when God speaks, even through the preacher. And here's what the people are saying. You want to know why we've quit working? You know, you want to know why we haven't started working on the house of God again? It just isn't time. It just doesn't feel right. It just doesn't seem like the right time. Well, I'll tell you, if we're looking for an excuse, we'll always find one. Anybody who doesn't want to do right can find an excuse not to do right. And they have one of the lamest ones I've ever heard. They say, hey, their excuse doesn't hold water. I know this. If I've got sense enough to know it doesn't make sense, surely the Lord did. They said, it just don't feel right. It just ain't time yet. Why not? God told them 16 years ago. In fact, 18 years ago, because they worked 2 years on the foundation. God told them a long time ago, go build it. Did God change his mind? I don't think so. So their excuse is it just doesn't seem like the right time. And that sure does sound familiar. It's so easy to talk about what we ought to do. I mean, listen, I have been dealing with this now for, 5 weeks, about getting back to where we used to be. And there's not a one of you that would say, oh, I don't believe that. All of us would say, yes, we need to get closer to God. We need to get back to where we used to be, or we need to get where we never have been before. All of us need to get back to God. And they would have said that, but they said it's just not the right time. And that's exactly where most of us, I say most of us, not many of us, most of us are at. We know what we need to do, but it just ain't quite the right time. I got a question. When is the right time? I've heard many preachers say, if now's not the time for revival, when is? If now's not the time to get right, when is? And I believe that's what our brother Haggai was saying to the people of Judah. They said, it's just not the right time. And listen, they weren't bad people. These were the people who left Babylon, left their homes, traveled hundreds of miles, didn't build the altar, did build the foundation. They weren't bad people. They just weren't doing what they supposed to do. They fell short of what God wanted for them. Did you hear me? They fell short of what God wanted for them. Did you hear me? They fell short of what God wanted for them. Who can say that's not me? All of us fall short of what God wants for us. I hope you don't think you're as close as you can be, ought to be. I hope you don't think that you're walking as close to and as right with God as. I hope you don't think he's completely pleased with how close you are to him. And I hope you're real close to him. But we can get closer. And that's exactly what this whole book's about. But they excused themselves because they compared themselves with others. And I think I mentioned that Sunday. And read this verse, 2 Corinthians 10:12. For we dare not to make ourselves of the number or compare ourselves with some that commend themselves, but they measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves are not wise. They are saying, now listen, we may not be building. And I'll tell you one thing, we ain't back in Babylon like that other bunch. We may not be all we're supposed to be, but I'll tell you one thing, we could be a whole lot worse. They're trying to excuse themselves. It's just in the right time. Things aren't just in the right place. And again, their excuses didn't hold water. It was God's will for them to build. Listen, it was God's will for them to build. Anything less than that was wrong. I say it, anything less than that was sin. Thus speaketh the Lord of hosts, saying, this people say, the time has not come, the time that the Lord's house should be built. Look in verse 4. Is it time? He uses a play on words, because in verse 2 he talks about it being time. And he says this, is it time for you, O ye that dwell in your sealed houses, and this house lying waste? He says, you say it's not time for you to build the house of God. I have a question. Where did these houses come from you're living in? During this 16 years, they didn't have the gumption or the umption or the wherewithal to build the house of God, but they sure did find the wherewithal to build them houses. And the word there is where it says sealed. It has the idea of being covered or comfortable. We would say, boy, that's a nice house. During this time when they're not working on the house of God at all, they're spending a whole lot of time working on their own houses. And he says, you got time to build your own house. And you say, it's a good time to build my house. But you're letting the house of God lay over there still unfinished. If it's not time to build the house, why are you spending time building your house? Really, that sure does sound an awful lot like today. Most, I say it again, not many, most, Christians, same people, are more interested in comfort than God's work. Being at ease, doing what I want instead of what God wants. And I see in these verses that God's not real pleased about it. Oh, ye that dwell in your sealed houses, and this house lie waste. He says, what were you thinking about? And we'll find out in just a little bit. They didn't just build their houses, but they're out planting vineyards, planting crops. They're doing a whole lot. They're doing a whole lot of work, but not for the Lord. They're doing a whole lot of work for themselves. Now, the problem was not that they built the houses. God didn't object with them building houses. He objected with them building houses before they built the house of God. Solomon had a mansion. Read about it in 1 Kings. Solomon had a wonderful house. But Solomon cared more for the house of God. Remember, he's the one that built the first temple. And he cared more about the temple, that God's house, than his house. And the Lord, through Haggai, is not really objecting to their houses at all. Go ahead and have houses, and have nice houses if you can. But not to the expense of God's house, God's work, God's will for your life. And they're going to find out that they have their priorities messed up. That's what Haggai is trying to say. That's what the Lord is trying to get them to understand. Their priorities are mixed up. They have more concern for their personal lives. And he's saying, he's showing, and we'll find out, until you get your priorities in the proper place, you're not going to have peace. We're going to find that out in just a second. Worldly things do not give peace of mind. That's why Jesus said, lay up not for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust doth corrupt and thieves break through and steal. He said, all this junk in this world, don't live for that. Don't let that be what you love. He said, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Paul said, in having food and raiment, let us therewith be content. Hebrew writer said, let your conversation be without covetousness, and be content with such things you have. So Haggai is speaking for the Lord, and they need to listen. Look on verse 5. Remember what we're doing? Ezra said in chapter 5, verse 1, that Haggai and Zechariah started speaking. Well, we're reading what Haggai said to the people of Judah. Chapter 5. Now, therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts. Again, Haggai said, by the way, let me remind you, lest you've forgotten in 2 verses, this ain't me speaking, this is God. Consider your ways. Now, therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts. 2 times in 1 verse, he said, this is what God said. And God says, consider your ways. It literally means, set your hearts on your ways. Consider your ways. It means set your hearts on your ways. What's he saying? Look at where you're going. Look at what you've been doing. Look at the path you've been walking for these 16 years and look where it has brought you. Consider your ways. Look at your ways. Do you not see what has happened to you? He's trying to warn them that the path they've been on, the path they had chosen, has brought them to a place that's displeasing to God. He is also saying, if you stay on that path, it's going to get worse. He said, consider your ways. Look at the path you've been on. Look at where it's brought you. Look on where it's going to take you if you stay on the path. You see, every decision we make has consequences. The path that they got on, they decided to get on themselves. And now Haggai is saying, will you please look at where you've come to? Look at the path that you've been on and where it's brought you. And friend, I want to tell you, we need to do that. Every decision we make has consequences, and God will let us make some dumb decisions if we are determined to. And when we make dumb decisions and get on a dumb path, we're going to have bad consequences. And when we suffer those bad consequences because of our dumb decision, we can't blame God. Because it was me that brought me here. Haggai says, consider your ways. Look at where you are. Look at where you brought yourself. So we need to realize the importance of being on the right path. He says, if you want things to get better, you got to change paths. You got to make some decisions. You got to decide some things. You got to do some things. You got to change some things. Talking about it's not enough. Knowing you need to is not enough. Making plans to and not doing it's not enough. You got to do it. Now, the words of Haggai were not easy to take, and they aren't tonight. But they were the truth, and they were what they needed. Sometimes the truth hurts, and we don't want to hear it. We are living in a day when people want a preacher to make them feel good. If you doubt that, look at the greasy-haired fella. He grins all the time. And see how many's coming to his church next Sunday. Well, the prosperity preachers, they want to be tickled. They want to feel good. Doesn't matter if everything's okay. Just tell me everything's okay. But just to be honest, that's real dumb. Because if I got cancer and there's something I can do about cancer, I want the doctor to tell me you got cancer. And I may not like it, but it's better than suffering and dying in darkness or him saying, I got cancer, and me saying, oh, no, I don't believe that. I'm all right. Well, we'll find out if we're all right. Haggai's words were hurting, alarming, disturbing, but it was the truth. Verse 6, you have sown much and bring in little. Hey, guys, still talking to these people in Judah that have quit working on the house of God. You have sown much during this 16 years. You ain't been laying around. You've been sowing for yourself, planting your gardens, planting your fields. You sow a lot, but you bring in little. You eat, you get some harvest, but you have not enough. The crops don't grow near like they ought to for some strange reason. Ye are not filled with drink. You drink, but it just never can get satisfied for some strange reason. Ye clothe you, but there is none warm. You make your clothes and put them on, but somehow you still stay cold for some strange reason. He that earneth the wages to put into a bag with holes. You get and it just seems like it just goes away somehow. Put it into a bag, it just falls out. Haggai is saying to these people, here's what you've been doing for 16 years. You've been working a lot and accomplished next to nothing. No matter how hard they worked, there was something lacking. Haggai is telling them the reason for their difficulty. Listen to me. It's because they didn't obey God. They had stopped doing what God said, and that never ends well. There's a threefold judgment mentioned in this verse. First, God withheld blessings. You have sown much and bring in little. The same God that is able to give blessings is able to withhold blessings. They planted their crops and they should have gotten 10 bushels. Somehow they didn't get before. They planted their crops and they should have gotten so much yield off that acre and it didn't get but about half. God was withholding the blessings. The first thing, he withheld blessing, the first part of this threefold judgment. The second thing they did not accomplish, or what they did accomplish, didn't satisfy. He that earned the wages and put it into a bag with holes. What you do get doesn't satisfy. You eat that cherry cheesecake. I got a good one the other day, by the way. And somehow, it just doesn't taste right. You eat those beans and taters and you're still hungry. You get money and somehow the washing machine breaks and the car falls apart and the chariot loses a wheel. And so God is judging these people, first, by the holding blessings. Two, by that they did do, not satisfying them. And then three, he literally sent judgment. Look in verse 10 and verse 11. Therefore, the heaven over you is stayed from dew, and the earth is stayed from her fruit. And I called for a drought upon the land, and upon the mountains, and upon the corn, and upon the new wine, and upon the oil, and upon that which the ground bringeth forth, and upon men, and upon cattle, and upon all the labor of the hands. God said, I have judged you. When it should have had dew, that surely was very important for them that had very little rain. And when there should have been rain, there wasn't. He says, I judged you. And the reason is because you weren't doing what I told you to do. You built your houses and you planted your vineyards and you planted your crops, but they weren't satisfying. See, they were just settling in, just living life and ignoring God. But God says, you've ignored me long enough. You know what? They probably blame the devil. Well, I'll tell you one thing, that sorry devil, I sure was expecting rain today, and it didn't come. I'll tell you, that devil made my little girl sick again, but they didn't realize it wasn't the devil, it was God doing it. I believe the devil gets blamed for a whole lot of stuff he didn't do. I believe sometimes it's the Lord. And the reason is, was because of their disobedience. We blame it on the devil, but it's really our fault. Verse 7 and 8, we'll back up a little bit. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, consider your ways. He says it again. Go up to the mountain, bring wood, and build the house, and I will take pleasure in it, and I will be glorified, saith the Lord. He says, here's what I'm going to tell you to do. I've told you what was wrong. I've showed you where you're at because you've done wrong. And now I want to tell you what you do. The only way you can get help is to do what I tell you to do. When our disobedience brings judgment, the only remedy is obedience. Did you get that? When our disobedience brings judgment, the only remedy is obedience. And that's what God is saying. Go get your wood. Go to the mountain. He's saying you need to change. A threefold command. Go to the mountain. He He's telling them where to go. Listen, listen. He's telling them where to go to get what they need. Where to go. And in your walk with the Lord and getting closer to Him, He will tell you where to go to get what you need to accomplish what He's trying to do in your heart. He said, go to the mountain. He told them where to go. He said, bring wood. He told them what to do. Go and bring wood. And build the house. He told them how to do it. He told them where to go, what to do, and how to do it. And boy, I'll tell you, if you're trying to get closer to the Lord, you need those things. And God will tell us. I'm kind of wondering, I'm about done. Why in the world didn't they do this before? I mean, listen, the Lord is just telling them to do what He's already told them to do years ago. Go and build the house. It looks like somehow during this 16 years, somebody would have thought, hey, you know what? God told us to build. Maybe what we're going through is because we're not obeying God. But it seemed like they just didn't get it. But God's waking them up through the prophet of Haggai and telling them what they're supposed to do. Let me say this real quick. He says, here's what I want you to do. And by the way, what I tell you to do now is exactly what I told you to do the last time I talked to you. If we're struggling about what God wants us to do, a good thing to do is look back to the last thing He told us to do. And maybe we ain't doing that. Well, look in verse 8, the last part. And I will take pleasure in it. My, what that says. If you'll do what I say, it'll please me. Boy, I love to please the Lord. I love for Him to smile. I love for Him to pat me on the head and say, you did good, you pleased me. And that's what God says through Haggai. If you'll do what I say, it'll please me. And I will be glorified, saith the Lord. If they did what He said and completed the work, God would receive glory. This spake Haggai, the Lord's messenger, in the Lord's message unto the people, saying, I am with you, saith the Lord. Oh my, what a blessing. He says, if you'll do what I say, I'll go with you. I'll help you along the way. Verse 14 and 15. And the Lord stirred up the spirit of Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, governor of Judah, and the spirit of Joshua, the son of Joshadech, the high priest, and the spirit of all the remnant of the people, and they came and did work in the house of the Lord of hosts, their God, in the 24th day of the 6th month, in the 2nd year of Darius the king. Here's what it says in Haggai. They listened. Notice what it says. God stirred the hearts of Zerubbabel and Joshua, and then it says, and the people. So God, just like He did to begin with, stirred the hearts of the people, and they listened, and God blessed. If you feel even a twinge, you hear even a whisper from God saying, I want you to get closer. That's God doing in you what He did in them. And in chapter 5, verse 2 of Ezra, it says, then rose up Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Joshua, the son of Jozadak, and began to build the house. Just exactly what Haggai says. They went back to work because they realized their failure for these years has cost them. And they're not only no closer to doing God's will, they're further. But God's will hasn't changed. Let's stand together. Thank you for listening.